I had some slides that were about a particular investigation I worked in 1985 that was of such magnitude that this crime being only come to the surface in 1985, I can say with no fear of contradiction that you and I are still paying taxes to undo the damage that this one individual did over 18 years of providing military secrets to the Soviet Union. And you and I are still paying taxes to undo this one man's damage. So that's the case I'd like to talk about. Now, there is a John Walker in the room. What's your middle name?
Looking for you, huh?
What's John Walker's book? What's your middle name?
John.
Don't answer any questions, John.
Because this, your unfortunate circumstances, the guy I'm talking about is named John Anthony Walker.
Close, huh? Wow.
John Anthony Walker was a senior warrant officer in the Navy, and at around the end of 1967, he walked into the Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C., and put himself up for hire. And for the next 18 years, provided them with top secret Navy messages. He gave them, over that time, over 1 million Navy messages. He gave them such high quality Navy messages that some here will remember that in 1968, the North Koreans took one of our signal ship called the Pueblo. Remember that? They took the Pueblo because they needed the radios so that they could decrypt John Walker's traffic faster than they were doing. How's that? Was he doing some damage? In other words, the Soviets were so impressed with this guy's data, they weren't afraid of causing an international incident. That's how bad they wanted. They took those radios. The North Koreans didn't get those radios. They were in Moscow within 24 hours. I was told that the Soviets were reading our message traffic faster than we were. They were gobbling it up. I was part of a squad of 8 guys. And to give you a sense of, and this is poor Alan, she had to go through this. We didn't talk about our own cases even to each other. The only guy who knew about everybody's cases was the boss. He had to assign them. So the guy behind me, Matt Parsons, was the guy who was assigned this case. He was working it for 8 months in the case that I've called the crime of the century. and I had no idea. This was not like when I first got to Norfolk, when you work criminal investigations outside what we called, we worked in what was called the terrarium. It was just a room that nobody else could go in but us. We were behind a door, and nobody else went in, but the eight of us. But if you were outside where I used to work, in the criminal area, you could talk about criminal cases. You know, you'd ask people, how would you do this better? And, you know, you could talk about criminal cases. That's no problem. But when you talk about these, you know, I'll call them spooky cases, you don't talk to anybody about those cases. It gets so crazy that even when I was doing my own work, I would send, let's just make up a scenario where I send somebody out to go do something, and he's working for me, he's a good guy, and he's going out to collect some material for me, and he comes back to me, and he's doing one of my cases, and he uses an odd word, a funny word, that we only use in that language. And I have to stop and think for a second, did I use that word with him? Or did the bad guy use that word with him? Did he really talk to a bad guy and that bad guy gave him that word? Or did I brief him with that word? I don't know how many times, no, that's not true. I lost sleep twice trying to figure out if I use that particular word that you only use in these kinds of conversations. It made me crazy. Because I don't want to startle him, and I don't want to ask him. I want to keep him clean. I don't want to mess his mind up. He needs to stay calm. There were times I'd come home and I'd just be like this, and Madeline say, "What's the matter?" I'd say, "Nothing." You know, nothing at all. And there were also times when I've disappeared. 5 o'clock rings, 5 o'clock comes and the phone rings, and it's my office. Madeline? Yes? Brian's not coming home tonight. Oh? Do you know where he's going? Nope. You know when he's coming back? Nope. If you need us, if you need anything, Madeline, call us. And I'll be gone. Couple of weeks, 3 weeks sometimes. And I come home and God bless her, she's never asked where I went. Never once. So like my parents had come into town on a Wednesday evening, and I had taken Thursday and Friday off to spend some time with my parents. This was in Norfolk. I worked at Norfolk, and we lived in Virginia Beach. So I spent, you know, Wednesday evening with them, and at about 2 in the morning, my phone rang, and it was my boss. And I said, yeah, come to work. I knew that he knew that I was going to take Thursday and Friday off. I also knew this was not the time to remind him of that. So I got dressed and I went to work. I never saw my parents. I never went back home until, I don't know, Saturday or something. We got to the office and it was like Grand Central. It was bright, everybody was there. And Matt briefed us on his case. There's this guy named John Walker, and he's been The allegation is that he's been given the Soviets secrets for 18 years. And we all went, huh? Well, that's the allegation. So, we're going to go down to the FBI's office, the FBI division, that's what they call their field office. We're going to go to the FBI division, and we're going to meet up with our partners down there. And we're going to go and search. We're going to get a bunch of search warrants, and we're going to search everything that he's touched. John Walker's background in his life was that he was a private investigator, which served as a nice cover for a spy, actually. So he had a business to search, he had a house to search, he had a plane, and he had a houseboat. And then the allegation was that his brother Arthur Walker was also involved. His son Michael Lance Walker was involved, and he was aboard the USS Nimitz in the Mediterranean in the radio room. How do you get a message to him? How do you get? We have agents, right, on every aircraft carrier. How do you get a message to the agent when the guy in the radio room could be the bad guy? Well, we sent the message to our agent in Rome, and he got on a plane and flew to Haifa and went aboard the Nimitz and put the habeas gravis on Michael Lance Walker, who never saw it coming, and quickly got a confession. The only written confession in the whole case, by the way. The agent aboard the Nimitz, the agent from Rome, flew to Haifa, gets Michael Lance Walker, gets a 17-page confession, does a search, finds green garbage pails filled with top secret material that he was going to give his father. He gets all of it packaged up, gets Michael Walker back to Rome, and they get on a plane back to the United States before the agent on the carrier ever gets back to the carrier. He was called the agent that was never there. That kind of followed him through his career, yes. So we got out to Norfolk, and our boss said, make sure you bring your raid jackets. You know what raid jackets are? Mm-hmm. See them on TV. And I said to myself, bring your raid jackets? This isn't a drug raid. I'm not going to bring my raid jacket. I'll lose it. So we got out to Norfolk and meet the FBI. The FBI has more assets than God. They flew a guy in from Washington, D.C. just to tell us how to behave in front of the TV cameras. That was his whole job. And he got back on a plane and went back to D.C. His first question was, does everyone have a raid jacket? And I'm feeling about this tall. Then he said, let me ask it another way. Does anybody not have a raid jacket? Now I'm feeling this tall. And I slowly raised my hand. And I look at my boss, and he is just boring holes into the back of my head. And the boss of the FBI spooky group that matched our spooky group threw me his raid jacket. So throughout the whole thing, I'm wearing an FBI raid jacket. which made my boss just love me.